AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
When I came to the U.S., one of the first projects I had, I didn't want to end up getting a job that I didn't like, that I considered soul-sucking to me, that is repetitive, that I'm guided by some protocols that are so boring. And of course, being under the supervision of somebody else was something that is not part of my identity. I think, you know, as Tony Robbins says, the strongest force that drives the human personality is the need to remain consistent or coherent with the way you identify yourself. So feel me when I bring it, sing it loud.
I'm from the loop and I'm proud. Run a mile for the cause. I'm right. Hi, guys. It's your girl, Nahamla, your favorite Jew from the loo. Welcome back to my podcast. And today I am so honored to have Andrea with me. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Nakama.
And I know that I'm butchering your name, so I'm going to let you say to the audience your full name so we could hear it in all of its glory.
Sure. My first name is Andrea. My last name is Spadafora. And I'm an Italian language tutor, interpreter, and translator, and also the owner of Yoga Fora LLC, a professional therapeutic massage therapy and yoga instruction.
Yes. And I'm so excited because I feel like there's so much connection and passion and all the things of who you are and what you do. So we met, actually, we have a mutual connection, Angela, and we met at her book club, the Bound for Better book club.
That's right. She is the, she leads this organization or this community called Arcana Collaborative. And we see each other often at Blue Sky Yoga Studio, where she also took her yoga teacher training.
Yeah, I'm so proud of her because she came on my podcast too.
Oh, she did.
Yeah. And when she was on my podcast, she was in the middle of her training. Mm-hmm. And it's just so phenomenal to see like her on the other side and now really immersed in this like
She's a great community. Friend to have for sure.
I was so excited when we met because you're from Salerno. Mm-hmm. And that was actually where I stayed when I went to Italy 3 years ago. Oh, ironically, of all the places in Italy, like ending up there was pretty wild because Americans don't usually go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is definitely a touristic spot. The reason for that is because it is the main port to access the Amalfi Coast, mm-hmm. which is an incredible touristic destination with those beautiful towns built on the rocks, right? We have not just Salerno, which is beautiful in and of itself, but also you have Vietri, Amalfi, Positano, you have the island of Capri, and you can go all the way to the other side of the Gulf of Naples until Sorrento, which is another incredible destination, which I highly recommend. And if you ever need any tips and tricks for an expert navigation, I'd be happy to be your guide. I can make the phone calls for you. Pronto? Vorrei prenotare un tavolo per 10 persone. I'd like to book a table for 10. That's something that I've offered here in St. Louis for a while now.
I love it. Yeah, there's something so gorgeous about Italy. Like, everyone wants to go there. Mm-hmm. And being a solo traveler for the first time, especially as a woman, there's like certain countries that you might be afraid to go to, mm-hmm. but Italy could not have been a better choice.
Did you go by yourself?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. So I started off in Venice and then I was determined to turn 26 in Italy. Uh-huh. So that's what happened. I rented this little apartment in Salerno, and then I booked on my actual birthday a Vespa tour. And went on this like 8-hour Vespa tour along the Amalfi Coast.
Done that multiple times. I was raised there. Mm. I was actually 26 when I moved to the U.S.
No way.
Yes.
26 is pivotal, right?
It is pivotal.
Yeah.
I agree. But yes, I had three Vespas going along the beautiful coasts. We also have a beach home in Pestum, which is a beautiful town, former Greek colony with the temples and everything. And so, in fact, I went there with my son, Pietro, last year. We went for 2 weeks to visit family and friends. It was an incredibly special happening for us, for our family. And we spent most of our time at the beach. My son was playing with the beautiful waves. We were collecting seashells. We were eating delicious gelato and mozzarella di bufala, the mozzarella made with the authentic buffalo's milk. And greatest pizzas in the world, the homeland of pizza. What can you ask for better? Great wine, great cheese, whatever you wish to have in a very romantic setting, Italy is the place to go.
Yeah. So what was that like growing up in Italy?
What is it like? Well,
like for real, right? Because like for us as like tourists, obviously there's so much that's intriguing, exciting. America doesn't really feel like we have culture the same way other countries do, right? But for you, like, what was it actually like growing up there as a child?
Yeah, I can tell you that there are some major intercultural differences I can mention. And there are so many, but I can just narrow it down to one, maybe one or two. The biggest cultural shock that Americans will get when they travel to Italy will be the extremely slow pace of living. I call it the polychronic perception of time, where time is always abundant, is seen as round and always abundant, never scarce. Whereas in the US, is seen always as linear and always, you're always in a rush here. When I moved to the US, I had to learn how to walk fast and always being on a timely schedule. In Italy, instead, you can take the time to enjoy the little things, to spend time with family. And instead of always thinking about the future, you enjoy the here and now moment, which is something that I incorporated a lot into my yoga practice. And we're going to talk about that as well. So that's one thing. What's different compared to Missouri? Obviously, here in Missouri, we are landlocked. Instead, I grew up by the beach, practically on the beach. So I could walk to the beach every day, just like the proximity to something so huge, so large, so much bigger than yourself. That is the seawater places you into an energy field that now I miss very much, right? Just the ability to swim the water and just float like a turtle.
Yeah, I think there's something so healing about water too.
Absolutely.
So it's and the really air. Hard. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. And growing up in Salerno, also, I am a drummer. I was born with a drumming bug. I was blessed with this God-given talent. And so I was having a lot of live music shows on the beach, right? Under gazebos or in those little pubs or live music venues, which, you know, brings me back to the best times, to the prime times of my life where the carelessness of your teenage years and your early 20s. So I had a lot of fun playing music that was inspired by the American rock stars. So Bon Jovi, all the rock stars from the 80s, Michael Jackson, Madonna, Stevie Wonder, Prince. And so I'm still, to this day, a big fan, and I've been the American rock music has been a huge part of the reasons why I decided to move to the United States. You know, the rock stars, the movie stars.
Yeah. It seems funny from the U.S., right? Because everyone dreams about Italy. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people who are not from the U.S. just dream about coming to America, right? Especially because you said of Hollywood, the way they portray it.
Yes.
Especially if you dream of being famous like a musician, right?
Yes.
Those dreams, they call you.
Yes. But there's some truth to it. And some others are just myths. For example, in the U.S., since when I moved as a transplant, I found that if you have a good entrepreneurial idea that you want to develop, if you have a, like, we call it el sogno nel cassetto, the dream inside of your, into your nightstand, right? If you have a dream into your nightstand, that's how you say it. Here in the U.S., not a whole lot of people will stand in your way. Meaning that you can always attract people in situation that will support your choices, no matter how crazy the idea sounds like. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, I had some ideas that I developed as a kid in regards to what kind of profession I wanted to pursue in my adult life. And I was always driven to body work, body practices, and then of course natural healing arts and just the wellness industry, a little bit of bodybuilding. When you are a young man in your teenagers, in your teenage, or you are in your 20s, you're trying to get some external validation by building the body, building the ripped six pack, right? So that you may be able to attract more and more people. At least you have the perception to attract more people to you. But then once you pass that stage, you move into other areas of the physicality of the body. And that's when I discovered yoga, which became then the one-stop shop for all the aspects of my general fitness, to the point that now I actually created a company called Yoga Fora, which embodies all of the above. You know, it's a holistic approach to your own physical and spiritual healing.
Yeah, I think it's funny, isn't it? I feel like I'm very much the same way, where when you love something so much and it touches you in a way, you could only be a consumer for so long before you need to be a creator for yourself.
Yes.
And I think a lot of times another similarity is that when you love something and you see the healing benefits that it does for yourself, then you want to share with others.
Yes.
Right? And create that community. So would you say it was in Italy that's when you discovered the love for yoga? Is that where that first came about? Or was it just more about this kind of chasing the passion of health and wellness?
Yes, but I have to mention something important about, you know, the how hard it is to actually make a living in Italy with those. Yeah. Well, even if you have the best certification, you go through the right school, you're still going to have to deal with a marketplace that has 60 million people in a very tiny country. So we're like packed like sardines. And we also have a huge influence from abroad, right? We have illegal immigration coming from Africa, North Africa, and Eastern Europe. So when something is so beautiful, everybody wants to get a slice of the cake, right?
Yeah.
So they're trying to squeeze in legally or illegally. And so the marketplace gets a little bit saturated. So what I noticed compared to the US is that here you can have a better opportunity to charge more money for the same service, right? Let's pretend I was in Italy today and we are in 2025 now, and I wanted to offer a yoga class or a group class or a massage, for example. I wanted to offer a 60-minute massage in Italy. The best money I could get for an hour massage will be at best 30, 40 euros, which is the equivalent of $40, $50.
Wow.
Right? And here instead, you know, I can, as an entrepreneur, you can set your own rates unless I'm working for somebody else. I'm working under the umbrella of somebody else.
And as long as people see your value, they'll pay you their price.
Yes. Correct. Exactly. 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 So, as my one of my favorite personal development mentors, Mr. Jim Rohn, which was the mentor of Tony Robbins. For those who don't know, Tony Robbins is one of the highest motivational speakers.
He's saved me a lot.
Yeah,
just absolutely. Hearing him speak. There's been so many mornings where I like listen to him while I'm getting ready in the morning.
So I wanted to mention that Jim Rohn, who was the CEO of Herbalife. Have you ever heard of Herbalife?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the supplement big industry in the US. He inspired me to, number one, read this book, which is kind of like the Bible of personal development. It's called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. This was written about 100 years ago. It says, this book could be worth $1 million to you. But one of the quotes from Jim Rohn that really stuck with me was, success is something you attract by the person you become.
Mm.
Success is not something you pursue. It's something you attract by becoming a person of value. Because, I mean, the essence of the marketplace is to, especially in the US, you get paid in direct proportion or in relationship to the value that you add to the marketplace. Last time you got paid some money is because you added value to somebody else's life.
Yeah.
In the form of a product, in the form of a service, or in the form of a concept that enhanced or solved somebody else's life's problem. You gave them a solution to a practical problem. Otherwise, nobody will give you anything for free, right? There's no free ride in this US marketplace. So if people are chasing the money problem, chasing the solution to the money problem, what they need to look at first is to how can I add more value to the marketplace? How can I offer a something that is unique, that there's the only, there's, they can only go to you compared to a gazillion other providers that offer the same thing.
Yep.
Because here's the other concept that I really embody these days, that it became very important to me, and that is people buy people before they buy their products, concept, or services. In other words, with all our personal likes and dislikes and natural biases that we have as human beings, like I said, people want to work with and pay money to people that we like, people that we trust. We establish a trustworthy therapeutic relationship, right? So people coming to me, for example, I'm a licensed massage therapist. I'm nationally board certified at a national level in the US. I've been a member of the American Massage Therapy Association for about 15 years now. This is my 15-year anniversary professional member. And even though I have all the certificates and all this beautiful mahogany framed certificates on my wall, what really makes the difference to me is the rapport that I establish between everybody I see, how I touch people with my spirit first, which is the metaphysical side of me. I always say that we're both physical and metaphysical. When I say metaphysical, I mean beyond the physical, something that is not tangible, your personality, your attitude, your body language, the way you walk, the way you dress, something that are specific and unique about you. And so you have to embody a personality, a persona that people can relate to, you know, while staying humble, using a student approach. You're always learning from other people. I'm learning from you right now, Nakama, how you're, you know, leading this beautiful podcast. And I wish you the best success and get as many followers as possible.
Thank you. Yeah. I love everything you're saying. This is like so on par with like what I love to listen to, what I love to read. Zig Ziglar has this quote, and I probably say it on almost every podcast. It's the quote that gets me fired up about my podcast, about my coffee brand, Le Café, which is, if you have an idea for a product or a business that's not currently in existence, and like you said, let's say yoga or massage therapy, these are not new concepts, right?
Absolutely.
And there's so many practices and so many studios and so many businesses that do it, but there's only one Andrea, right?
Absolutely.
And so there's only one you who's bringing your experiences, your culture, your all the whole thing wrapped up. It's you, right?
I call it radical subjectivity.
Radical subjectivity.
Radical subjectivity.
Yeah.
That's right. The unique expression
and,
of you.
And Zig Ziglar says that if you have this idea for a brand or a business or a product that's no longer, it's not in existence, it's your moral obligation to make it a reality.
Sure.
So what was it that took you from Italy to the US?
From where, sorry?
To Italy.
Oh, Italy,
US.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You didn't,
it's the English, way I said it, my American accent.
You didn't pronounce the T. I didn't hear the T, Italy.
Okay. You know what's funny? Side note, in high school, we had like a public speaking class. And I didn't say the T's, like I didn't enunciate them properly, where it was like don't, won't. And so now sometimes I overpronounce it because my teacher made me practice like for hours.
That's good. Yeah. And by the way, in Italy, we pronounce, because I'm also an Italian language tutor in the Hill neighborhood, every other Saturday from 11 to 1, check me out on Speak Italian with Andrea on Facebook. But what I really, the first lesson, lesson number one, we go over the alphabet in Italiano. So how we spell the ABC, ABC, because in Italian, every single letter of every single word is spelled and pronounced properly. We don't mumble. We say, for example, my name is Andrea, right? But it's pronounced Andrea. Right, the R's rolled. So there is something about communication that is very important. Communication is key to success. If I were, when I came to the US, one of the first projects I had, I didn't want to end up getting a job that I didn't like, that I considered soul sucking to me.
Yeah.
That is repetitive, that I'm guided by some protocols that are so boring. And of course, being under the supervision of somebody else was something that is not part of my identity. I think, yeah, you know, as Tony Robbins says, the strongest force that drives the human personality is the need to remain consistent or coherent with the way you identify yourself. So if you are, depending on the roles and the attributes that you give yourself, that's how you attract the reality of your life, right? Mm. So if I have some positive thinking, I make positive affirmations about who I am, that is going to be a reflection of how people perceive me as a parent, because I'm also a father of a very handsome 9-year-old boy, as, you know, the leader in this business, like, you know, somebody that can give some valid advice to people that are in the same industry. As a father, as a professional, as a member of the community, the yoga community, etc., is because I was able to create a strong sense of identity, right? And especially in an era, in a day and age where we're all globally interconnected, right? This is something that is absolutely unprecedented. Information is freely and widely available these days at no cost to people. We have AI, we have social media, we have Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, right? So information is everywhere, but what people are actually looking for is not information, but it is transformation. People want to be transformed, but transformation requires a level of action. You have to go from an intellectual understanding to actual factual work, right? So because knowing and not doing is just the same as not knowing. It's about applying what we learn, not rather than just being entertained by what we learn, right? So to go back to your question, I'm sorry, I was digressing a little bit.
No,
that's
okay.
What I typically do.
I call it the magic of the mic, plus you're Italian, so we'll just go with the flow.
Yes, and I'm a big philosopher too. I read a lot of books on philosophy, spiritual growth. See, this is, for example, a book that I highly recommend, Handbook to Higher Consciousness by Ken Keyes Jr. You should put it into your purse when you go to Africa. It's going to be very inspirational.
That's awesome.
But I was going to say, what made me move to Italy, from Italy to the US? Initially, it was simply a bug, like some kind of idea that I developed when I was very young. My mom, Clara, ciao mamma, if you're looking at me, se mi stai sentendo. So my mom worked for an Italian-American company, a glass and paint industry called PPG, Pittsburgh Paint and Glass.
Yeah.
In the Italian branch of the company in southern Italy. She worked there for about 34 years until she retired. And she was the secretary of the director of the operations. And so my mom was coming back home always talking about the relationships between America and Italy. And so that kind of gave me a little picture of something to look forward to. Something to look up to, right? And then combined with, you know, watching movies, American movies dubbed in Italian, you know, we used to watch the old sitcoms or the play, movies like, or shows like Different Strokes or Fame or, I don't know, The Simpsons. A lot of shows that are still today's day on Italian television. And of course, all the rock stars. I was a big fan of Michael Jackson. I'll still am to this day. I think he is one of the greatest stars in the firmament, in the constellation of music. Yeah. So Italy, the trip to. So essentially, what you do when you develop a picture in your mind, right? There is a transition point. It's called the quantum to Newtonian transition point. You develop the picture in your mind when you're a child. And then just like a photographer needs to wait for the picture to develop into the back rooms. Remember back in the days we used to have the Polaroids,
yeah,
which takes a little time to develop to the actual picture. Essentially what happens is that you develop the picture that framework into your brain, into your mind. And then you start attracting people and situations that will place your body and mind and soul to attract what it needs to be attracted to transfer your physical body into that environment, right?
Yeah, like the law of attraction, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. So essentially I traveled the world a lot. America was not my first country that I visited. I lived 1 year in New Zealand.
Cool.
Yeah. I lived 1 year in New Zealand. I was doing the woofing, the wild work on the organic farms. So I had a little budget. I had 5,000 euros kindly given to me by my aunt as a donation, as a gift. And so I said, okay, this is a good time. I'm 21 years old. I want to travel the world. This is when I should go. And so I booked a trip to Thailand and New Zealand. So the farthest places I could ever get from my tiny little Salerno. And so I went to Thailand to study Thai massage for 1 month in Bangkok. I went to visit my aunt, who was because she passed away. She was a nun in Bangkok. She was a missionary nun in Bangkok. And then I went to New Zealand. I traveled the North Island and the South Island as an exchange student first, but then I just went out on my own. Life is so great there. Life is cheaper. There's so much space, so much connection to nature, great hikes, 60 million sheep. So New Zealand was another, actually New Zealand, that's when I discovered for the first time books on personal development. Yeah. I started to visit libraries, go into the personal development section of the library and picked up books by Deepak Chopra. Are you familiar with Deepak Chopra? So Synchrodestiny was one of the first ones. And then, what did I do? Oh, yeah. So here's how I ended up in the U.S. Going back to Italy, I used to work for a lot of spas and wellness centers. And I was employed in Tuscany at this gorgeous resort, which I encourage everybody to look up right now. Adler Therme, A-D-L-E-R Therme. It's in Bagno Vignoni, in the province of Siena, in the heart of Tuscany. It is one of the five-star resorts where you can get everything, all the best of the best of the Tuscany villages, all in one place. Cooking, massages, saunas, muds, pools, everything. So I used to be employed there. In the meantime, one American photographer came to visit. By the way, at that place, I massaged a lot of sports stars, soccer players, ski players. It was a great experience. So I met a photographer who invited me to visit Long Island for the first time. I had never been to the U.S. before. So she invited me to Long Island and said, Andrea, you can stay here at my house for a month. In the meantime, if you want to look around, feel free. So I got on her bike. And then I went to research what it was needed to become a U.S. citizen, right? There is a whole very lengthy and costly immigration process that I had to understand. I was completely unaware at the time how to get a social security number, how to essentially get a visa for the United States. So I already had a marketable skill in my hand, which was massage therapy, right? I was already a massage therapist in Italy. I worked on probably more than 5,000 people in Italy. But I wasn't licensed in the U.S. Everything in the U.S. needs to be American accredited, right? So you need to go to an American accredited school in order for you to hope that you can practice massage in the U.S. So I signed up for the Baltimore School of Massage. I got an M1 student, which is specifically for, trade schools. So I had to pay for the tuition, of course. I had to pay for all the expenses, travels, food, accommodation. And I eventually graduated from the Baltimore School of Massage, which gave me access to more resorts, more wellness centers, even franchises such as Massage Heights. Most people know Massage Heights. And then that's essentially how I ended up here. 2006, I discovered DC, which is a beautiful, amazing, 11 million people, very diverse, all of the consulates, all of the embassies are in DC. I was visiting churches. I was visiting, you know, live music venues, and I had a great time. And that's where I met my now former wife, the mother of our son, Pietro. We decided to move to Colorado by mutual choice because everybody was telling me that Colorado was the Mecca. It was the probably the highest consciousness. How do you say it in English? Un secondo, aspetta. It was, Colorado was one of the places where yoga is still prevalent. There's a lot of yoga training schools. There is
it's like the epicenter for health and wellness.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. For sure. But going back a moment. Sure. So when you first came to like Rhode Island, right? Obviously yes. It's fun to like see a new country and experience that, but was it a shock culturally at all compared to like, I mean, obviously you had traveled before. It's not like you never had left Italy. But America isn't as cultured or there's beautiful scenic parts, but there are parts that are very much commercial, right?
Sure.
So what was that like for you?
Well, when you're just traveling as a tourist, in your mind, you know you're going to go back to your country. Mm. So you're just visiting. Your mindset is the one of a visitor. So whatever you see and the people that you encounter are just superficial relationships. Mm. You're going to say, hi, how are you? By the way, I had to learn that. Sometimes when you say, how are you here in the U.S., it doesn't really mean that you generally want to know how the other person.
Very true, yeah.
Right? It's just a way to say hello and something informal and quick. It's not an invitation for a long conversation because time is money in America. Everything is on a linear track. So everybody has got things to do, people to see, and things to do. So that's one of the things that really was shocking for me. But what I was really, really impressed with is the level of customer service, the infrastructures, the beautiful establishments, the way that things work, even the bureaucracy. You ask for an information, you ask for paperwork. Everything is quickly accessible.
Efficiency. Very efficient.
Within like days, you don't have to wait months and months of bureaucracy. For example, if you want to notarize a document in Italy, you have to pay big money to a notary who's not a notary public. It's a notary, is a lawyer. They have to pay hundreds and hundreds of euros just to notarize a paper for you. Here, you can go to your nearest bank and they will attest that you are the person signing that paper for free, right?
Yeah.
It is insane. So I was really attracted by the convenience, the efficiency of things. Everything is quick. Everything is really, really accessible. So it creates a very fluid and dynamic marketplace, especially for somebody that chooses to live an entrepreneurial life.
Yeah, that's well said. That's true. That is very true. I will say that that's something I don't give the U.S. enough credit for. I think maybe you take it for granted when you grew up that way, right?
Yes.
And obviously the U.S. must have something to offer the world. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, not everybody from all the other, you know, countries would be wanting to come to us. Mm-hmm. So
what I was not aware of, though, I mean, obviously, no country is perfect. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because every country's got its own history. Mm-hmm. And of course, 100 years ago, not even 100 years ago, even the Italians were discriminated upon, right?
I heard. Oh,
yeah. We were essentially, I cannot talk.
Like second class.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there were some things that probably would not fly well today in this new world that we're living these days. There's more, I wouldn't say equal opportunity, but there is more accessibility.
Acceptance, I think, is more of a tolerance. Better word. Yeah, mm-hmm. People are more accepting. Say that like people now are definitely more accepting.
Yes.
Which is wonderful.
Right.
It is fascinating to hear how it really wasn't that case even just like 50 years ago, right?
Yeah, and I have to be honest, you know, in my line of work, which is massage therapy, in an American context, I have to be very careful with the gender preferences and gender fluidity, identity, differences in an identity.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because coming from an Italian background, like I said, I lived my first 26 years in Italy. That's when your essentially brain is developed.
Yeah.
That's all of your values, beliefs, and routines are established at a young age, right? So it's hard to, you have to essentially become a chameleon. You have to embody, you have to retrain your brain.
And unlearn.
Unlearn and relearn. Exactly. It's called neuroplasticity. It's a process that continues until the very old age, right? So for those who want to learn how to speak Italian, don't tell yourself that you're too old for it, okay? Come to see me and we have a chat. But I was going to say, Italy, unfortunately, depending on your personal subjective perspective, has been a very patriarchal society where the men was the one wearing the pants most of the time. And therefore making the primary decision maker for the family. Even the language itself may sound a little sexist. In Italian, we have, just like in most Latin root based languages, we have the masculine and the feminine genders, the grammatical gender.
Hebrew's the same way.
Right. And so in a day and age where you really have to be mindful of how to address people, either by he or she or they, for me was a little bit overwhelming, and still is to this day, to kind of have to adapt and modify my behavior accordingly.
Can I teach you a secret?
Yes, please.
Just say their name. Instead of being like he, she, they, that, just be like Andrea, Nahama, Sarah, yes. Right? Like yes. Whatever their name is, just say their name. Right. People love hearing their name anyways. So there you go.
Yeah, but you have to understand we are also, our body language, our bodily expression expresses so much of our inner state and psychology. This is something that I see even in movement therapy. I can tell simply by looking at an energetic level, somebody who's walking in the room, I can read the attitude, I can read the intention, right? I can tell where he or she is coming from internally. And so for me, it's very hard not to be judgmental in a way that is authentic. I think that the idea that we cannot be judgmental is more of a myth than an actual practical choice.
For sure.
Right. I know I identify you as a woman, beautiful woman, by the way. Bellissima, as we say in Italiano, right? So if I choose to be integrous, because here's what I tell in yoga all the time to my students, your heart knows truth. Your heart operates out of a binary equation that says either yes or not yes. Feels good, doesn't feel good. You move away, you move towards something. In other words, the best condensed version of my spirituality readings that I've done over the years is that the heart operates either out of love or out of fear, right? So when I talk to my students in yoga, I say, and we are in the first opening phases of our breath work at the opening of classes, you know, I tell them to observe their thoughts and ask themselves, are my thoughts coming from love or coming from fear, right? If I don't fear you, if I look at you with an unconditionally loving lens, then I don't mind what is your gender preference, what do you do in bed or not. That's your business. You know, that's your, I see you through a loving lens and I accept you and I tolerate you to the best of my ability, as long as, of course, you don't harm me, you don't come back to me and harm me, right? Because we all have a sense of self-preservation and protection, obviously. So there is that. So, that's what I meant by, trying or striving to see everybody as a an unlimited being. As an unlimited right. being.
And I think being part of the spiritual and health mm-hmm. and wellness community anyways, mm-hmm. that probably, I would say you probably have two voices in your head, right? Because you've yes. got like the traditional Italian background, right, the mentality right. of very specific genders, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have the health and wellness community, which yep. is very loving and very accepting yes. and very much, oh, these beautiful souls, right? Like we look at people like souls in the health and wellness community, not so much gender-based.
Let me tell you about my personal experience in the holistic healing arts, and especially more specifically in the therapeutic massage world, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm a licensed massage therapist. I've practiced this for 24 years. I've worked on over 30,000 human bodies of all kinds of shapes, bodies, wow. injuries, surgeries, traumas. And yet still, I do encounter from time to time some gender preference bias. Both in the yoga world and massage world, they tend to be primarily female dominated as an industry itself. In other words, people tend to establish more trust, initial trust, toward women than toward men. Yes.
That's fair.
It takes us men or men therapists or men yogi teachers to kind of dismantle the initial mistrust that exists as an outsider. Men are almost seen as outsiders because the nurturing is primarily given as a skill to women. Right. I was telling you how I was making some compliments about, you know, your nurturing presence and your active listening skills that you have in this podcast. That's mm-hmm. what attracted me to you and wanted to do this today. But, you know, so those are characteristics that are primarily given to women, even like touch, for example. Most people don't even go for a massage primarily to fix a knot or for some physical ailments. No, they go to get a massage because they crave what they're missing the most, and that is the loving, healing touch. Now, the perception of touch is individual, but it's subjective. But there is, if you look at the marketplace, if you look at statistics, it is primarily an opportunity that is where women have been given a preference, right? So, in other words, just like coming to St. Louis, this was the other segment we were going to talk about today. Is so, you know, how you've been adapting to the city of St. Louis. I've only been here 3 days, 3 years. Sorry,
I was like 3 days. You've been here longer than 3 days.
I moved from Colorado May 1st, 2022. Can't forget that day. I moved here because I'm here for my son. My son goes to school here, and I'm here to be a very actively involved father for him. So as soon as I moved here, everybody was telling me the same thing. Andrea, it's not you. It is the collective consciousness itself that tends to be clicky. I didn't know what clicky was. I had to look it up. What does it mean, clicky? And so I looked it up, and the Google says, you know, it means where it's a place or it's a group of people where, you know, it's not so welcoming to outsiders. It tends to form communities that are tight and not so welcoming to outsiders unless you were born here, went to school here. Another St. Louis question everybody asks is, where did you go to school?
Right.
Because by answering the question, the other person listening can essentially
connect or disconnect.
Right, but can also frame you within a social economical context.
Right. You know, funny story about that.
Tell
me. I grew up here.
Uh-huh.
But the high school that I went to was a small Jewish Orthodox girls high school, which most people have never even heard of. So when people ask me that question, they're like, I'm sorry, what? Because there was only 25 girls in the whole school.
Wow. And the classes were separate. So men in one class.
I went to an all girls school from second grade through 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
No boys in my school, mm-hmm. not even mm-hmm. in my class, like not. Mm-hmm. Not in my classroom, not in the building, totally separate.
How did you feel about that? Can I ask you a personal question? How did you feel about that? Back in the days, was Was it creating some kind of inner conflict? Did you want to connect with boys or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's human and that's normal and that's natural, right? I mean, I think, to be honest, I turned out differently because I grew up segregated from men. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just a school thing. It was a cultural thing. Because growing up in the Orthodox Jewish world, mm-hmm. Jewish women and men are completely mm-hmm. separate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So even when I reached a certain age, once I reached middle school and I was 12, mm-hmm. there were certain family friends who didn't have us over anymore because they had sons my age mm-hmm. and they didn't want us talking. Mm-hmm. So it's not even that I didn't go to school with boys. I wasn't friends with boys at all.
Wow.
So until I went to college, mm-hmm. there was no connection. And so that was very intimidating for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know how to talk to them.
Right.
I remember we were touring the classrooms in college. And the student advisor, she was like, yeah, these are the classes. And I noticed, obviously, that there was like boys in the classes. And I was like, wait, so there's going to be guys? She's like, yeah. It's like, do I have to talk to them? And she looked at me like I grew a second head or something. And she's like, yeah, you have to talk. I mean, she's like, you don't have to, but mm-hmm. you're probably going to have like certain group classes, activities. And honestly, it probably wasn't until I was like 23, 24 that I got even comfortable like doing this right now, just doing a podcast, being able to comfortably talk with like men.
Yeah.
I could never have done this in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. Never. I would have mm-hmm. been so uncomfortable just because of how I was raised.
Right, right, right.
And I think it made me more feminine, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think I probably would have been more of a tomboy because mm-hmm. men are just so much easier to hang around. They're mm-hmm. so chill. They're so mm-hmm. relaxed. Mm-hmm. Whereas girls are so fun, but sometimes can be mean and super clicky,
right?
You know? And so I think I would have turned out differently. But also just between being completely surrounded by women and then also just how we were raised traditionally, mm-hmm. I was raised very like old fashioned, if mm-hmm. you will, mm-hmm. to the point where even in high school, we had like marriage classes, in terms of like, we even had a class where we would monitor kids, like we were assigned families that would have like babies, and we would like talk about like certain months from like 0 to 6 months and toddlers and young children. We would journal, come back to class, and we would talk about it. And they really like trained us to be wives and mothers, and like almost like a finishing school in my high school, which you don't see in public schools today. They don't do that at all. So it was very old fashioned and very traditional. So I definitely didn't have the typical upbringing mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm.
So in hindsight, learning and knowing what you know today, would you have done anything differently? Or you wish that things were different so that you would have been better prepared to face the dichotomy of men and women? Or, you know, how do you feel today?
That's such an interesting question. Because, like, I think sometimes we look back on our life, right, and think, oh, maybe if I would have done X, Y, and Z differently. Mm-hmm. Or there are certain things that are not your choice, right? Because when you're a child, how you were raised, that's correct. Not your choice.
Same here. I was raised Catholic. I had no choice.
Right. Exactly. And so it's, like, interesting to think how, if certain things were different, would I have become different, right?
Right.
I don't know. And I think I'm in an interesting stage of my life because I want to be a mother one day. And mm-hmm. so thinking on like, and I'm very proud of my Jewish heritage, mm-hmm. but like, I'm not as strictly Orthodox as I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And I know I want my children going to Jewish schools. I know I want them having that Jewish pride, but it's not going to be as strict. My children will probably go to co-ed schools. To be honest, I don't think I would send them to separate schools. If my child reaches a certain point where they desire to go to an all-boys school and all-girls school, I'll be like, yeah, for sure. But I'm not going to throw that on them because I am a late bloomer in a lot of ways mm-hmm. because of that segregation, right? I think it's been a lot more difficult for me socially, especially like in my romantic life because of that. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't change anything, honestly, mm-hmm. because I'm so proud of who I am and what I've become and the process. Like your 20s, no matter what, is a blooming process, right? And so I'm through this podcast and the conversations I've had, I've realized what an incredibly special upbringing I've had. Uh-huh. So to be honest,
I'm glad.
No, even though it was very like, you know, segregated from like men and women. And it was very, what's the word? Insular, right? I was in this like bubble. I didn't really know a lot about like what was going on culturally in the world. People, you know, from St. Louis, Missouri, people call me like a cultural immigrant because I didn't like listen to non-Jewish music or I didn't read certain non-Jewish books. And I was very like in my own religious world.
Can I ask you something?
Did
you
it was have, beautiful.
Did you have a fear of men? Did you fear men?
Did I fear men?
Yeah. Like encounters and contact and did you have like some kind of prejudice against men at the time? Maybe I've subconscious, never... maybe unaware, but you know, just something that will prevent you to explore what's on the other side.
I think I didn't think that I could ever just be like friendly with men without them falling in love with me.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I see.
Where I was very much like, I think this was a naivety of mine. Where my dad taught me this trick with dating. He's like, it doesn't mean a thing unless the phone call rings. In other words, men will look, men will give compliments, men will chit chat with you, right?
Yes.
Doesn't mean anything. Everyone flirts.
Sure.
Unless a man takes the action to like pursue you, it doesn't mean anything. Now, because of the way that I was raised, if a man would even like look at me in my early 20s, I was like, we're getting married. This is what's going to happen. He must be in love with me. So I think I was also egotistical just in my young 20s being like, oh, all men are in love with me. But I realized like, that's not the case. People can appreciate you. People appreciate like flirting, but that doesn't mean they're in love with you.
Yes.
And so that's something that I didn't realize because I was just very like naive, innocent, and a little egotistical.
I understand. I would say. And I can tell that, I mean, obviously I was a boy. I mean, I was a teenager myself and I remember how hormonally I was driven.
Right.
And so I was not really led by my forebrain, my prefrontal cortex. Right. I was more led by my limbic system. So toward, you know, food and procreation. And so whenever I would see beautiful women, you know, my primary choice was not to, you know, play the role of the romantic lover.
No, you weren't like, oh, what a beautiful soul. Let me get to know your thoughts and ideas. Right. You know,
I understand.
Listen, I think there was definitely girls I went to high school with who had boyfriends and snuck around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was a rule follower, but also I've always been very mature and very intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I never felt that any of the high school boys were truly worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I had crushes just like anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just more about I knew what I wanted one day. And these high school boys weren't worth wasting my time.
Correct.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so it was a kind of hard that we grew up like more segregated, sure. But honestly, probably was a blessing that we weren't around high school boys. You know, men really are better later when they've had their brain developed. So
interesting.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you about the this model, this framework that I learned through this gentleman named Peter Sage. I want to credit this guy because he was an illuminating presence in my career, in my life, and I discovered a lot in personal development thanks to him, because he was able to essentially bring some very complex concepts into very easily accessible materials for me to learn. So he talks about how to look at life through four different lenses or four different levels of consciousness. The first attitude or the first level of awareness is called the to-me mentality or the victim mentality, where we look at life as things are happening to us. So by being victim, you're essentially struggling every single day to elbow your way into life. And unfortunately, because things are happening outside of your control, you just surrender and essentially accept things as they are, but you're always blaming. You're always blaming the outer world. So to move to the higher level of consciousness, which we call or he calls the by me mentality, we need to release blaming the outer world, and essentially accepting the responsibility. Personal responsibility to move into a state of the entrepreneurial stage is when essentially you're sick and tired of being sick and tired of sitting on a chair and waiting for the opportunity, you know, the message in a bottle or whatever happens, is that you move into action, right? And so that is the buy me mentality. The buy me mentality works great. And I for somebody who is in victim. But it's very exhausting because you're fighting against a system that is already set up for hustling. There's a lot of hustling involved. You're working 24/7 trying to get your name out there and trying to essentially make the most out of your time. It's a very inefficient system. Although some people really manage to catch the rabbit of fulfillment on a track of achievement, you know, you start making, drawing a little bit of cash flow, you work your ass off, but it's very exhausting. Yeah. So he recommends stepping up into the next level that he calls the through me mentality. The through me mentality is where things start to flow, not because you put the hands on the handle of your life, but because you spontaneously allow the energy field of life itself to work for you. Right? So you start to acknowledge synchronicities, coincidences, right? So for example, in my encounter to you, we already established a couple of coincidences, right?
Yeah.
Salerno, Angela Berra, I mean, some things that kind of, that some connecting dots, right? And that those things happen spontaneously, effortlessly, spontaneously, without even doing a whole lot of planning. It is the best,
even
right?
You're in flow. And
you are in flow. So that's what means the level of consciousness all through me, right? You're not pushing. You're not struggling. You're not working your ass off. You're still putting in the work. I mean, you're still definitely trying to put your name out there, provide value, add value to the best of your ability. But at least you're working out of heart. You're working out of passion. You're working out of something that is really soul fulfilling, rather than having to take all of the steps that are required to just like make the same amount of money doing repetitive things that you don't even like, right? So through me. Now the fourth level, it is called the as me mentality. And that is what most yogis or people involved into the holistic arts or just into the spiritual world try to connect to. It is not always available. I think only a very, very tiny chunk of the population can achieve is the as me mentality, is when you give up the illusion of separateness, the illusion of separateness. Mm-hmm. So in other words, I see myself in you. You see yourself in me.
In the collective.
We're mirroring each other. Mm-hmm. There is no more separation, masculine and feminine. There is no more separation, the boss and employee. Mm-hmm. There's more separation, the black and the white. There's no more adversarial or competitive environment. And now in this kind of arena, you can transcend again the illusion of separateness, and you can create a collaborative space, right? In fact, I often tell everybody that I connect you professionally, I always say that one of my favorite mottos is cooperation is the new competition, right? So I'm a man, I don't feel the need to compete with the world of women, however differently wired they may be. And women don't need to compete with the world of men, however wired we may be or we may perceive to be, right? Yeah. So there's no more competition in that. And so by looking at the lens of life, by looking at life through this lens, you create a collaborative approach where I care for you. I genuinely care for you. I want you to thrive into your endeavors. I want to make your $1 million. I want you to chase your rabbit and be successful. Because I know that my needs will be met. I'm supported by the energy field of life itself. I know that whatever created us is there to support and to meet our needs. Abundance is seen everywhere.
Yeah. I have to ask you a question. Yeah. This is, I didn't prepare you for this question at all, sure. But I'm just so intrigued. So my listeners know that I am obsessed with AI. I'm obsessed with ChatGPT. I call ChatGPT Gigi. We're besties. And so the other day I saw a TikTok where this girl asked ChatGPT, what are men around the world asking ChatGPT? Like, what is the real questions that guys are wanting to know, right? And so apparently the new question that a majority of men are very concerned about is with women rising in their independence, whether it's through purpose and career or finances or just as individuals, right? People are getting married later in life. So they're really developing character outside of the role of wife and mother, right? So men are wondering, if my purpose is no longer to completely provide, right? Because people are more in a partnership now.
Yes.
Then what is my role as a man?
Hmm.
Isn't that so intriguing?
It is, absolutely. Now you don't need a man to fix your toilet anymore. You can look it up on YouTube, right?
You can. Technically, yeah. For a second and just say, so I'm 29, right?
Yes.
And so I have a lot of friends who are like around my age who are single, mm-hmm. like late 20s, early 30s. Mm-hmm. Let me just tell you, we've done the whole independent woman thing. Mm-hmm. We've changed the dialogue. Mm-hmm. We're self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. If there's not a man around, can I fix my toilet? Yes. Do I want to? No.
Can I give you an answer? An answer, not the answer, because nobody's got the truth. Answer. Yeah, the truth with a capital T doesn't exist because we don't have it, right? Mm-hmm. We're not capable of doing that. That's a limitation of being human. So you're going to always hit the wall in that sense if you see the separation between the men world and the women world. Always. Like I said, you know, we are in a global interconnected world where information is no longer a problem, right? However, we still have to deal with the natural world, the natural essence of being part of a biological system that is going to perpetuate until way after we've been gone, right? Mm-hmm. We all know that life is finite. Best we can live 100, maybe 120 years with modern technology these days. We have expanded the lifespan, right? But still, that doesn't change the very fact that nature operates under the two laws of growth and contribution, right? We all have a built-in, both men and women have a built-in need for growth and contribution.
Yeah.
And how do we grow and contribute? One way is to, if you don't want to become a father or a mother, if you don't want to commingle as a species in men and women, you still have a built-in need for growth, right? You don't want to be stagnating on a couch,
right,
doing nothing and eating nachos and cheese, right? You want to have that physical, we have physical needs, we have mental needs, we have spiritual needs. We all have our wants and needs, right? Both men and women. So the answer lays into how can we actually cooperate, tolerate, and operate out of an energy field that is collaborative, that we are actually not just at a family level, but at a societal level. How can we provide an environment where we can all make better choices that are made out of love and not of fear? Mm. Right. So to conclude, you're right. Women do not need men. You don't even need a man to have a baby these days. You can get in vitro fertilization, IVF, if you have your motherly instincts, but you don't want to. Maybe you have trauma, you have, you know, deep ingrained trauma that doesn't allow you to actually, you know, have sex with a man, right? Or whatever your beliefs may be. But, or maybe you're a lesbian. Like you only can love one person of your same gender.
Or you just have women who have found love, their biological clock is ticking and they want to be a mother.
That's right. You have all of the above. So that is no longer an issue. Information and technology now in 2025 are unprecedented. You can do things today that 10 years ago were unthinkable, right? Mm-hmm. Just like right now, we're putting together a podcast,
right?
Whipping it up in an hour, you know, with this beautiful equipment. I'm still impressed. I'm learning from you. But yeah, so the only way that we can create a cooperative environment is through mutual love. Right. By the way, on the other side of men, you're talking about women asking about what is the man side. From the man side, you know, now technology has created an environment where we don't even need a woman to pursue our, you know, to satisfy our personal needs.
This is true as well. Yeah.
Right. You go back home, you create, you know, you have the encyclopedia of, you know, sexual gratification online.
Right.
I'm not going to mention the actual names, but, you know, everybody, everything is available.
It's accessible.
It's accessible.
Easily accessible.
It's accessible. So
even let's say with dating, right? Dating apps has made it so much easier.
Hell
people
yeah.
People can do like casual relationships versus back in the day. If you didn't actually talk to someone, you will be alone, right?
Not just that. No, yeah. Back in the days, as far as I know, as far back as I can go, because I'm from 1978, so I'm 46 as of today, going for 47. So I'm middle-aged. So I'm not old, but I'm not a spring chicken either. So I was going to say, I remember stories of people wanted to date women or vice versa, but they were not, you know, the communication back then, there was no internet, there was no letters, there was nothing. You had to essentially take a picture of yourself, a Polaroid picture of yourself, and take it to the priest of the village, of the Catholic priest. Now, the priest, which was the most educated person in the village or in the city or in some of the most, because back in the days, education was a privilege of the elite,
yeah.
Right? We didn't have God Google back then.
Mm.
So you go to the priest, you give the picture, and the priest will become the matchmaker for you. Even remotely, let's say I wanted to date somebody, or a woman wanted to date somebody immigrated in Australia or immigrated in America, you would have to go to the local Catholic church. The church would actually, the priest would actually draft a letter with the included picture, and it will be sent to the local, you know, parish,
yeah,
all the way to the other side. So that was the matchmaking back then. Now you have the entire world. With a click of a fingertip, you don't even have to pay for it. There is Facebook dating.
There's Facebook dating. There's Instagram. You find someone's profile, you can message them. You know, it was so funny. Yes. I went to a speaker recently. He was saying how he met his wife.
Yes.
He was in prison. This is a wild thing.
Yeah.
He was in prison.
Yes.
Somehow he had access to Instagram.
Yes.
Mind you.
Yes.
He found his wife on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
This was before DMing. So how people used to talk on Instagram back in the day, which isn't that long ago, was you would like comment on one of their profiles and you would have a public conversation and hope that they would delete it later. Can you imagine?
Yeah, absolutely. I have my own personal views on marriage, but I don't know if we have time and space to talk about it today. Great. Well, you know, well, let's go into the topic we were talking about, relationships.
Yeah.
Right. So, which is a hot topic for many people these days.
Yeah.
Right. So we've been talking about how digital interconnectivity has been transforming the world that we live in today. Right. And specifically in relationships. Now you can have access to people that was almost impossible before, right? So now you can have intercultural relationships. You can pick the criteria. Essentially, you can filter through the criteria you want specifically within the image that you create. Let's say, for example, you come from an Orthodox Jewish background, correct?
Correct.
Right. So it is likely that probably, as you mentioned before, I think you shared that with me, that if you were scanning through the marketplace, let's say the dating marketplace, you will probably filter through somebody who is on a similar mindset, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So I think the first time we met at Café Dolce, right?
Yeah.
And I was telling you, I remember if I asked you, you know, would you ever date an Italian? Would you ever date somebody who is outside of the
culture.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's your take on that? What is it? What is how you feel in this day and age where you have so much optionality? Given the optionality, would you stay confined within your old thinking, or would you be open to new ideas?
I think it depends on the individual and what their intention is about dating, right? So I think that, like, for example, I could be friends with anyone from any culture and any religion. It doesn't matter to a certain degree, right? As long as like the energy is good, I could be friends with anyone. But when it comes to romantic relationships, that's different, right? We're already filtering things out because, like, at least for me, I'd say I'm straight, right? So I'm only interested in men.
Yes.
That already pushes all gay men away, obviously. Yes. That pushes away, like, any lesbians. I'm not interested in anyone who's, like, pan or bi. Like, I want someone who's straight. Mm. So there's that. But then there's also the thing of, I think if I didn't want children, I could be in a relationship with anyone because to a certain extent, you're figuring things out. But for me, I want to be a mother, right?
Yes.
And so I think about the home that I want to build, the values. It's not just me. It's their father as well,
yes,
right?
Totally.
And so, like,
it takes two to tango,
it
right?
It takes two to tango. So it's like, for me, also, my family is so important to me. Mm-hmm. So what would they accept? What would be good for them? So for me, I think it's more about, I don't see myself dating someone who's, like, strictly orthodox because that's not who I am. So that wouldn't be a good match for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's more about, I always say, like, Jews for joy, right? Like I said, I want my kids going to Jewish schools. I have Jewish names that I have in my head for my kids. I want to have a lot of, like, Jewish traditions in my home. Mm-hmm. So the only way that I could date someone who was, like, outside my faith would be if they were, like, agnostic or, like, spiritual. But I couldn't date someone who it was, like, I don't know, like, they were, you know, if someone is, like, super devout Christian or Catholic or Muslim, that wouldn't work for me because I don't want Jesus in all of my home. No offense. It's just that's my preference for the home that I'm trying to build.
Right.
I respect other religions and other cultures, but when it comes to the values of my home, that's why you have to be discerning, right? Right. And so I think the thing about modern dating is as well is that I think there's a deception that people think that we have all these options. You don't. Because first of all, in Hebrew, we have this phrase, which means that finding your soulmate is as hard as splitting the sea.
Yes.
It's hard for humans, but it's not hard for God. And I do believe that there is a soulmate for each person. Now, sometimes people have multiple soulmates in a life, depending on their soul's direction. But I think that for the most part, we don't have as many options as we think we do, right? Even if you're interested in someone, I'm sure a lot of singles can attest to this. You may have been interested in someone, but they don't like you. Or we've had the opposite experience where someone's interested in us and we are not interested in them, right?
Yes.
So to find two people who are interested in each other and their values align and everything is a match.
You're right.
You know.
But what do you think about, can I ask you about the sort of the authenticity of an Facebook or Instagram curated image that anybody can create these days? For example, you know, you are
like catfishing.
No, let me give you a practical example. Back in the days, to get to know somebody, you had to ask for their number, right? There was no Facebook, there was no social media. You had to maybe hear about people through word of mouth, friends or family. You had to essentially gather some information to put together a picture of this person and picture yourself next to that person, right? Back in the good old dating days. In my mom and dad dating days, my dad had to actually obtain permission from my mother's father so that they could walk around
the neighborhood,
the block. No, actually, my grandpa needed to be able to see them walking down the alley, right?
Love that. Yeah. That's so great.
So this was dating in the 60s, 70s, right? Yeah. 1967. Now we are in 2025. Now we have anybody that has tech savvy, and who is not these days? I mean, unless, you know, everybody's got a phone, right?
To some extent, we're all, so we can figure it out.
So, yeah. So,
or you can find a friend to help you figure it out. Right?
Right. You go to anywhere. You go to a gathering, a meeting, a bar. If you're a bar person, you go to a live music show. You show up with your phone. You can even, like, put, like, a QR code that will direct you straight to your Instagram page.
Yeah.
Right. And essentially, what's going to be on there is not going to be your authentically physical identity of you. It's going to be a curated image that is adapted to what you want to let the other person perceive of you. Mm-hmm. It is not the rituals that you embody behind the closed doors of your own house, right? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, what typically happens is that, and it is different from what it used to be, is that when somebody presents himself or herself with just an Instagram account or a Facebook account, you have a curated image of yourself. And so the other person has an opportunity to do what's called the other person is going to snoop up on you.
Stalk.
Yeah, I would call it stalking. But I mean, if you put it publicly, obviously, yeah, you want to be seen, yeah, right?
I mean, obviously. I know I have 3 pages so on Instagram, so for sure.
So you want to be seen. No, my question is, just to conclude, so essentially you create a public sort of image of you, mm-hmm, you know, you going to the gym, you going to eating healthy meals, having this beautiful lifestyle that is, you know, everybody dreams about. And then you're going to look at your potential partner, you look at his or her Instagram account, and you're going to project in your mind, what is my life going to be like if I were to take pictures next to this person? Is it going to be a good fit for me, right? Is it going to be the exact, is it going to be a good match for me based on what I see online, whether that is what I actually experience in the physicality, in the embodiment of walking, you know, hand in hand, right? What do you feel?
So I think that that's a pitfall that a lot of us fall in, no matter, mm-hmm, like gender, age, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's, we see Instagram and I think logically we know it's just the highlight reel, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. It is, yes, the curated version. It, yes, is the best version of yourself.
Yes.
We know that logically. I have friends who, like, you look at their Instagram profile and everything looks happy, light and fluffy. And I know that they are going through a lot emotionally.
Yes.
They're not going to post that because that's not for everyone.
Right.
I think we have to take a step back and realize that Instagram and social media is fun and it's light and we take it too seriously and wrap our identities too much around it. For me, it's a fun thing. I'm not going to share everything with everyone. I share what I want to share. And sure, I think whether that's Instagram or real life, when you first meet a person, it's surface level. Mm-hmm. Whether that's Instagram, mm-hmm, or not, people will share what they want to share. We've, yes, all curated an image.
Yes.
It's easier to curate it on Instagram, but we all have a curated public-facing image.
Yes.
In the end of the day, it is a privilege to get to know anyone. Mm-hmm. And that also takes time. And then the end of the day, we all are very flawed, mm-hmm, and we all have issues and, mm-hmm, we're all going to do something that's going to drive our potential mm-hmm absolutely insane, mm-hmm, right?
Yes.
That's the reality of it. Yes. And it's more about, like, my grandfather always used to say when it comes to dating, he was a very renowned psychologist and he had all these books. My grandmother did too on dating. And I was reading Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you don't need that. And in Yiddish, there's a word mensch. Mm. To be a mensch is to be a good person, right? Mm-hmm. A person of value, a person, mm-hmm, who's going to be kind. Like, how I'm trying my best. I'm just growing. You're a human. You're just growing. Mm-hmm. You can find 2 people who can bring out the best in each other and who are givers. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to have a beautiful relationship. Mm-hmm. Where your values align, right?
Yes.
And so, I wouldn't take Instagram too seriously. And I think that's a dating problem in general, where, like, maybe you have this fabulous date with someone, mm-hmm, and you're like imagining and daydreaming about what your life is going to be. Mm-hmm. You got to slow it down. Mm-hmm. And this taps back into the yoga and wellness, right? Be present and reality. Yes. How is this person showing up for me? How am I showing up for them? Do I like who I'm around? Mm-hmm. Like, what are they bringing out of me? Yeah, person brings out something different, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a journey and that's a process.
Yes.
Also,
yes,
as a man, I have a theory.
What's that?
I think that every man has one woman in his life who's the love of his life. Truly, I do. And I think when he meets her, everything shifts. Everything changes.
Well, let me tell you my perspective on that.
Yeah.
I might agree with you partially. However, we are also, you know, we have a personality, we have beautiful features, but at the end of the day, we're also animals, right? We have the animal part of us, which, mm-hmm, is not always pleasant. And, you know, sharing and cohabitating and sharing too much togetherness said, which requires a lot of tolerance and acceptance of the other person's flaws, right? Like you just said, we're all flawed, right? Well, potentially at least. So cohabitating for the same person, that is sleeping with the same person in the same bed every single night for the rest of your life, it is an idea, it is a concept that it's, I see it disappearing more and more in relationships these days. I can see how a relationship could work best if both partners, if you want to make it into spouses, great. I mean, if you want to seal the deal with a legal contract, which the marriage is, then it's important for both parties to have their own individual spaces, either within the same home or living in two homes. Because it is important to have a place to retreat. It's important to have a tiny, tiny personal space that no matter how the day went, the way it went wonderful, the day was productive, or the day went like a shit show, you know that you don't have to essentially go back home and fight another war because you don't like the togetherness with another person,
right,
who is under stress herself or himself for other trauma or trouble, you know, whether it's at work, whether it's with children.
Well, I think that comes down to that's going to always be evolving.
Yeah, definitely. Right? It's an ever-evolving process.
I mean, let's say, for example, someone meets at a very young age in their early 20s and they're married until they're 80, right? Mm-hmm. There is a lot of seasons in that lifetime, and your needs will be different throughout those seasons. And so I think it just comes down to finding someone who, I think that's why having a strong sense of self is very important.
Yes.
And being self-sufficient is very important.
Yes.
Where there is enough overlap of values and things that you guys enjoy together that you can do together.
Yes.
Because in the end of the day, the whole point of being in a relationship is that you're not alone. You are building something together.
Correct.
So you do want to share that with someone, right?
Yes.
But
it's
at
just
the
not
same time, well, I think if you find the right person, that could shift.
Okay.
And this is my theory, right? Like, you want to find someone who is your peace.
Right.
When you come home, it feels like home. That's what home should feel like. Should you maybe have a man cave or a she cave where like you can have your time? For sure, that's healthy. That's normal.
Uh-huh.
For some couples, that's also like, that's giving each other time to go to the gym and work out and have that space. Or he has his guy's night, she has her girl's night, right? But I think overall, if you are a healthy individual and you found a healthy partner and it's a healthy relationship together, I think you're going to want to just be with them. Like my grandmother said, her grandmother taught her that you really love someone when like you can walk down the street together and be holding hands and not say a word and feel totally at peace, you know? And so I think it's more about not being in that victim mentality. First, we have to take ownership of creating that space and peace within ourselves, enjoy our own company, and have something that we're purpose-driven and passion-driven about, and then finding someone who also has that. Because I think when you have two people who are purpose-driven and have their passions, but are also looking to create something bigger than themselves, like a family, right? Whether that's with kids or just the individuals coming together.
I went through it, yes.
That creates, if you find the right partner, and that's the key, right? Because I think picking the right partner is the most important. That's why I've been very discerning, because it's the most important decision you can ever make. Finding the wrong partner creates literal hell and will affect your finances, your health, your relationships, your trust for future relationships, right? But that's why I would rather be single than be in a relationship that's the wrong fit for me. But when I find the right partner, when you find the right partner, it's going to change everything for
you. I understand. I understand. And knowing...
Romantic too.
Me too. Me too. But it's very important to understand that the marriage, the legal part of the marriage, is one of the most, if not the most important legal contract you will ever sign in a life.
Because if it goes wrong, it could be a huge...
And you know, getting married is easy. You can go to Vegas and get married 10 times. They will give you the 11th wedding for free.
Well, in Catholicism, do they not also, you go through like a whole thing with the priests beforehand, if I'm correct. Is it priest? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Like you do therapy, you ask each other a lot of questions.
Yeah.
They want to make sure.
No, I understand. And so just like I was saying, getting married is easy. Getting divorced is hell.
For sure.
It is, you know, for marrying, you get the cake, you get the party, you get the fun. Right. And but behind the scenes, you're signing an actual legal obligation and putting the government in the middle. Right. That is going to, if you guys have kids and 5 years down the line, one of the two parties change personalities, change likes or dislikes, just change in general. There's, you know, some what they call the irreconcilable differences. That's what a dissolution of marriage is. Right. That's why people ask for divorce. That's the actual legal term. Irreconcilable differences.
Yeah.
So that it becomes an incredible, a traumatic event in your life that is going to disrupt you emotionally, logistically, and financially.
For sure.
So before doing that step, I just want to, you know, give my take on it from a place of experience, you know, relationships are great, but people can change over time, you know. So I know I'm going to be a different person 5 years from today,
yeah.
Hopefully a better person, hopefully a more spiritually and emotionally evolved person. I keep learning, I learn from you.
Mm-hmm.
But having gone through the technicality and the practicality of what relationships can be disruptive in certain moments, it is very important to go in with an open eye. With an open eye and, you know, not to be too skeptical. Most people that come out of a divorce are very traumatized,
yeah.
Meaning they kind of look at relationships with a different lens, saying who wants to get into more trouble, right?
Nobody goes into marriage thinking that they're going to get divorced.
All right.
My mom was divorced. My dad was divorced. It's a second marriage for both of them.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So, and it's interesting because neither one of them particularly believed in this romantic love
mm-hmm.
beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
They both kind of married the right people at the right time in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they met each other, they all of a sudden, my mom describes it as like, she felt like it's like a train's coming towards you and you know, it's going to crash and there's nothing you can do to stop it kind of thing. Right.
Yes.
So it's like, it exists and it's rare and you have to be patient. And I don't think a lot of people are patient. And for mm-hmm. various reasons, people get into relationships. People don't want to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
Life yeah. is expensive it's alone.
Also, you know, for example, keep asking you a question. Do you enjoy more prepping a good, healthy meal for yourself and by yourself, mm-hmm. or you do enjoy prepping and eating a healthy meal in the company of somebody?
Really enjoy being single. I'm not going to lie. I really do. I love my space. I love myself. I have so much peace within mm-hmm. it. Do I get lonely? For sure. I'm a human being.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to be in a romantic relationship, but at the same time, because I've cultivated such a self-love within myself,
mm-hmm.
I don't need to have another person. It's an enhancement, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah, I understand.
So
no, but
finding
I mean,
the right person, it's both.
Right.
I find a lot of joy in cooking for myself, having a lovely meal for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I find a lot of joy in cooking for my family and cooking for my friends. If I am dating someone, cooking for them, I find joy in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yes, yes, and yes, right? Like I find joy in both.
Right. Do you ever find yourself in a situation where, okay, you know what? I'm by myself. Nobody's watching. Nobody's judging. I don't feel like cooking. And there's nobody around that I can share a good meal. I'm going to just go for comfort. I'm going to go for the frozen pizza or the cheeseburger.
Yeah, because I'm a human being. But you know what? Like, the way I see it, though, is I know I'm a romantic. And I know everyone thinks that I'm all like heart eyes and whatever, but I'm not naive either, uh-huh. right? Mm-hmm. To me, an ideal relationship is there will be nights, probably once like I have kids, where my husband and I look at each other and we're like, we're having frozen pizza tonight and we're eating in bed in our pajamas and we're not doing anything to be fancy. And that's fine too, uh-huh. right? So I think it's like life isn't a Hallmark movie as much as I love them.
Right.
And to me, it's more about making the mundane magical, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when I think this is what I look at as love. When I can find someone who like going to the grocery store, getting gas at the gas station
mm-hmm.
with, that's I can do it by myself and enjoy my time by myself, but like doing with them is also really fun.
Yes.
So I think that's kind of just where I'm holding, where I enjoy life so much alone right now. Mm-hmm. If I could find someone who my private time is still lovely, but then having them integrated into that is an enhancement, that's when I know I found the right person, you know?
That's great. Glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Love to hear how your life will evolve, and I would love to stay in touch. And if you ever want to try one of the services here, you're more than welcome to. If you want to kind of try one of the yoga classes.
Yeah.
If yoga is part of your self-care regime, I'd be happy to be a resource for you.
Yeah.
And in fact, I wanted to kind of transition to a happy note. One of the things that I say to the students and to myself, whenever I teach yoga, I also teach it to myself. I refresh and I remind myself of this hopeful mantra that I used, and that is that creation is ongoing and continuous because of the presence of divinity. Now, I don't label divinity in the sense of Christianity or any specified denomination, but I do believe in a higher power that loves us, otherwise we wouldn't be here today.
I agree.
And the creation is ongoing and continuous. What is divinity? Divinity, I see it as the powerful field where it is the powerful field out of which potentiality becomes spontaneously an actuality. It is a field that is constantly present. Everything arises. Everything that we can experience with our five senses is derived or it comes out of divine ordinance, including our thoughts. And so it is a field that is constantly present, is beyond time and place, beyond time and place. It has no beginning and no ending. And so with that happy note, with that happy, hopeful note, I always encourage people to remember that we are unlimited beings. We are only subject to what we hold in mind, right? What we hold in mind tends to manifest. And love is ultimately the highest law of the universe, right? Fear, whatever fear you may have today, fear is healed by the energy frequency of love, right? So these are the core concepts that I utilize in my yoga teaching, in my yoga practice. I always end my classes by repeating this at the end of class after Shavasana. And I also use a lot of readings, excerpts.
Is this your life lesson?
Yes.
Okay, so one moment. I'm going to do a little intro.
Okay, sorry.
You were too ahead of me.
I thought we were over. I mean,
we have a little hourglass. You guys can't see it, but that's how we keep track of the time. I appreciate that. Just a little intro.
Yeah.
Because I know you're about to share it, and it's beautiful. So I have a tradition at the end of every podcast. I like to share this Hebrew quote, which is Ezeh Chacham Halomei Mikol Adam, which means one who is wise is one who learns from everyone, which very much encapsulates everything we've talked about and who you are. And we've learned so much from you. So if you can leave us with one last little life lesson.
Yeah. So there's nothing more powerful in the world than the human mind and prayer and belief in yourself, self-confidence, perseverance. No matter how many times you do something you're passionate about, continue doing that until it feels right. And no matter who's around you that has been negative or thrusting negative energy at you, totally block it off, because whatever you believe, you become. Success is something you attract. By the person you become. It's not something you pursue. It is something you attract by becoming an attractive person. So I'll leave you with that.
Yeah. And what was the quote that you said also earlier that you say at the end of the yoga class that you share with everyone?
Oh, the creation part?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Creation is ongoing and continuous because of the presence of divinity, the powerful field out of which potentiality becomes spontaneously an actuality, a field that is constantly present. Everything arises out of divine ordinance, including our thoughts. Be the source of joy, be the source of peace, be the source of benevolence, be the source of unconditional love towards yourself, starting with yourself, so that you have so much more energy to give to others, to be the provider, to be the safe spot, to be the trustworthy person that are going to come to you for guidance in a time of need.
Beautiful. Yeah. Love that. Okay, so we've covered so many different topics today. Yeah. Is there anything that we haven't touched that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, well, definitely. Obviously, we're here. We are at Yoga Fora LLC, located at this inside the CIBC place in Brentwood, Missouri, in the beautiful incorporated municipality of Missouri, of St. Louis. It's right off Highway 40. It's very easily accessible right off Highway 40. It's identifiable, super easy. It's right across the street from Whole Foods or REI or Michaels. And it's inside this beautiful hidden gem. It's a small boutique personal training gym that is called Flex Time Fitness, owned and operated by Dr. Deborah Haston. She has been a bodybuilder and a professor in the science of exercise at the university. But anyway, so come to see us. So my massage therapy practice is available by appointment only. My rate is $100 for an hour massage, $150 for a 90-minute session. And before the first session, I ask every new person, new client to fill out an intake form and a waiver of liability and consent form for massage therapy. I don't have any specials. I don't have any, because I want to provide individualized quality care for anybody that comes to see me. So if you want to come to one of my yoga classes, please check out Blue Sky Yoga Studio, located at 3525 Watson Road. It's right by Trattoria Marcella, which is a restaurant that almost everybody knows, or Pietro's restaurant on Watson Road. I offer a very fun, dynamic vinyasa flow every Tuesday at 7:30 a.m. You can sign up online on MindBody or just look up blueskyyogastl.com for the class schedule. You will also find me at Urban Breath Yoga Studio, which is in Maplewood, another beautiful, great, great studio. Everybody's really amazing. I really enjoy the presence of so many inspiring teachers. Everybody shines forth their personalities, their energy, their approach to, you know, mind and body fitness. So I feel very blessed to navigate this American reality as an Italian transplant. You know, I think that every thing that I learned has been almost always a lesson in disguise. So anyway, so please check out my Facebook page, Yoga Fora LLC, for professional massage therapy and yoga. And also, if you're interested in traveling to Italy or you want to reconnect, if you have family or friends who have Italian ancestors, you can find me under Speak Italian with Andrea on Facebook. I don't have a website for that yet. I only have a Facebook page. But I tutor the language every other Saturday at the Hill Neighborhood Center and Heritage Museum, which is located at 1935 Marconi Avenue. They have a beautiful conference room. It's every other Saturday from 11 to 1. And I have over 400 presentations organized by topic, grammar, pronunciation, and vocabulary. So we're going to strengthen your grammar. We're going to strengthen your pronunciation. You're going to be able to say, pronto, buongiorno, buonasera, arrivederci, mamma mia.
I love all right. It.
So.
So great. Thank you so much for giving us the space and for sharing everything with us. This has been really a beautiful episode. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. I just want to say one more thing just to make sure that the listeners know. I'm offering a, maybe people can see it from here.
I'll also share it on the screen as well so we can make it a little bit larger.
That's right. So this is something that ongoing that I just created recently. I put it together as a package. It's a condensed version of a one-year-long curriculum. It's a workshop. It's a donation-based workshop, essentially. It's called a Holistic Approach to Mind and Body Fitness. And so I'm going to provide handouts and a workbook. It's a two-hour event that I'm going to organize and present to different locations. So if you have an office and you want to do a staff appreciation day or a teacher appreciation day, I can both come in with my chair because I also offer chair massages. So essentially offering back, neck, and shoulders for your employees or your organization. And I can also provide education in the form of this beautifully crafted workshop that I think everybody will enjoy. More information can be obviously, and pictures can be found on my Facebook page. Oh, last but not least, if you have any documentations in Italian that you want to be translated, this is an example. This is the Stemma della Famiglia di Gregorio. This is the coat of arms of the Di Gregorio's family, which is one of the main supermarkets in the Hill neighborhood. I provide extensive and very accurate translations of the family heritage, heraldry, and genealogy research. And I can also assist with naturalization, both, you know, for Italians becoming U.S. citizens or U.S. citizens wanted to become Italian citizens. So I do that assistance as well. I am the guy to call for anything that has to do with the Italian word. So I am Andrea Spadafora at Yoga Fora. I am Mr. Yoga Fora.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. You are a man of many hats.
Grazie. Thank you very much, Takama. It's been a pleasure to meet you. It's been a pleasure to have you here today. And if I can be a resource for you in any shape or form, I'm always at a click of a fingertip for you.
That's right. Thank you. Well, guys, this has been another amazing episode. Thank you so much for listening or watching. And if you're not currently watching, the video is on Spotify and YouTube. And if you're not already subscribed, what are you doing with your life? Please go subscribe, especially on YouTube. That's where I'm mainly trying to grow my podcast. And if this episode was meaningful for you, please share with a friend. And another thing is that I'm always on the hunt for a good story. So especially if you're local here to St. Louis, DM me at JewFromTheLou on Instagram. And who knows, you might be my next guest. I hope you guys have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.